Hello everyone, I'm Gary Elwood with ProQuest Technologies. Welcome to today's call. Now I know John's got a lot of great information to cover with you here today, so I'm very quickly going to go ahead and turn it over to you, John. Take it away.
Thank you, Gary. Hi everyone, welcome to today's call. We're talking about your business plan for 2017, and in case you haven't done the math, today is November the 8th, which means we've got roughly 22 days, maybe 3 weeks left in this real estate year. And then it's going to be December 1st, and we're going to be off and running into the new year. So a couple of thoughts here before we get into the outline. The first one is that at this point in the year, your outcome for the year behind us, 2016, the outcome of that year for us, for most of us, is pretty much decided. Over the next 3 weeks, there's not going to be a whole lot that we can do to gratefully impact the outcome of this year. So the point here being is that our heads have to be into the upcoming year. We should be thinking very thoughtfully and deliberately and persistently about what we want to accomplish next year. And last time that we met, last coaching session, we spent an entire coaching session on the first section of our business plan, which is our goals for next year, which are our goals for next year, I should say. And so hopefully, if you haven't written that down, if you haven't completed that section, hopefully you'll get that done between now and maybe the end of the week. Hopefully, if at the very least, you've gotten that in your head, you know, how you want to roll. And just remember, the most important thing that we can do is communicate that information to our brains about our goals in very simplistic terms, mainly in terms of transaction sides. How many transaction sides do we want to complete next year? Is the major question that we want to answer in our goals section. How many of those do we want to be buyers? How many do we want to be sellers? And then the rest of the game plan, business plan, is going to be built around that. So we're gonna jump into our outline now. A couple of disclaimers, guys. This material can be a little bit dry. I'm going to do my very, very best to make it at least move at a good clip and keep you engaged, but by its very nature it's kind of dry material. But here's the thing that I want to tell you: a lot of the material that we're going to be covering today falls under the heading of business skills. And when we look at our success as a real estate practice, you know, we need certainly good sales skills, you know, good people skills, good sales skills. We need really good business skills. We also need really good technical skills. And where this thing starts coming apart for real estate agents is in this wheelhouse of business skills. Most of us on this call are very, very gifted people. We're very gifted salespeople. We're probably even pretty good with technology, right? We've got good technology skills. When it comes to business skills, what I find is the whole thing starts to come apart for us. We're not real proficient in the business skill area. So this is one of those subjects, right, where we really have to suck it up, right? I don't know how else to say it. We really have to suck it up, and we really have to make a commitment that even if we have to wade through some of this material, that we're going to get our arms around it and we're going to implement it, because it can mean, guys, I am not being overly dramatic to make the point. I'm being literal here. Your business acumen, your business skill sets, which can be acquired, by the way, right? Your business skill sets can make or break you. They can be the difference between success and failure in your real estate practice. And one of the problems that I see are that agents, you know, come in and they're at, you know, moderate to low levels of production. Well, you don't need a ton of business skills at those levels of production. You can kind of squeak by. But as you get better and better at your production levels, you need to get better and better at your business skills. And if you're not, you can create a flipping mess for yourselves. I can't tell you how many people, you know, are up there making $300,000 a year, $400,000 a year or more, and their real estate practices are a complete and utter mess simply because they've never cultivated business skills. You know, they're coming at 350 and 400,000 and more in production levels. They're coming at that whole area with the business skill sets of somebody, you know, who's earning $50,000 or $60,000 a year in the real estate game. Not a good plan. So if you're at the maybe $50,000, $60,000 a year earning level, or even maybe even a little less, what I would tell you is that it's incumbent upon you to learn these skill sets now so that at higher levels of production, you're going to be okay, right? You know, I've seen it. I mean, literally seen it, guys, where you know, somebody is doing, you know, $700,000 a year in gross commission income, $700,000 a year. That's almost $750,000. I can remember this one individual, and this person was functionally broke. I mean, functionally broke at $700,000 a year. How can you be functionally broke earning $700,000 a year? How can that happen? Answer, spend $720,000 a year. That's how it happens. So I hope I've gotten your attention enough that you're going to stick with me through some of this drier material. So let's jump into step three on your outline. Complete sections 2 and 3 of your binder, your operating budget, and your cash flow worksheet. And what I'd like everybody to do, if you have your materials either printed out or they're in the zip file that Gary sent out, and I think he sent it out in PDF actually, there's a cash flow chart in that material that I put together a number of years ago when I wrote an audio program for another company on business planning. And that cash flow chart literally tells you how cash flows through your real estate practice. So if you can get that up on the screen or you can get that printed document in front of you, it's going to be really helpful. So the first thing that happens as cash comes into our real estate businesses, we intake the money. It's called gross revenue, right? The gross revenue, it's the gross commission that we collect before anything's taken out of the equation, right? So where do gross revenues come from? Well, of course, they come from commissions. They come from referral fees. Some of us charge transaction fees or conveyancing fees. Sometimes we create gross revenues by selling, you know, ancillary business and service, ancillary services like a home warranty. Remember, I used to get a small commission for selling a home warranty. Some of us have title company and mortgage company alliances where we're hopefully in a RESPIN compliant manner collecting, you know, dividend checks or marketing agreement checks. Like I said, legally and legitimately, that's gross revenue. Property management commissions for some of us, you know, that goes into gross revenue. So all of these things that we do to bring money into our real estate practice before anything is taken out of it, before a dime is taken out of it, is in this bucket called gross revenues, right? Now, here's the deal. The problem with the real estate industry, by and large, is that our agent population sometimes doesn't really get that the operative word in gross revenue is grossed, meaning that before anything comes out of it. And we kind of get on this trajectory where somehow or other we link up that gross revenue equals net revenue or net profit. No, it does not. No, it does not. And that kind of thinking has sunk more ships and ruined more good people and caused so much heartache for people in the real estate business because they really don't get that at a core level. They might get it intellectually, but they behave in a manner consistent with everything they earn is theirs to keep. It is not. It is not. And we've got to be really, really careful here, guys, because like I said, the industry is set up. You know, you get awards based on your gross revenues, right? Nobody gets awards in this business based on their net income. Maybe that's the way it should be. But we're all getting, you know, all the trophies and all the awards are based on the gross commissions, gross revenues that we generate. And I think it creates a lot of trouble for a lot of people, the way that the deck is stacked. So Let's start chopping away at those gross revenues. What's the first thing that comes out of those gross revenues? Well, first thing that comes out are transaction fees, franchise fees, right? So like franchise fees, if you're with a franchise and 6% comes out of your check before splits to go to the mothership, well, that's coming out of your gross revenues. These things are called cost of sales, by the way, cost of sales. They're not operating expenses, they're cost of sales because they're based on a percentage or a flat fee of the gross revenue. We've got some brokers charge a transaction fee, you know, some of the 100% companies. Commission splits with your broker, they come out. Referral fees that you pay to other people, they come out. Commission splits to others if you have team members, that all comes out of your gross revenue. Now, just a little bit of a caution here to everybody and a disclaimer all in one. The disclaimer is that I am all in favor of broker owners of real estate companies making a fair and reasonable profit. Broker owners and real estate companies are allowed to and should make a fair and reasonable profit for the risk that they take and for the duties that they assume and for the services that they provide to their agents. I'm all in favor of that. Now, what is fair and reasonable is a definition that you have to work out with your own individual brokers. Here's where I draw the line, guys. When you see your 1099, when you see your commission checks, these checks are all net of what has been taken out of them by your franchises and by your brokers. So if you're in a company where you have a franchise fee of 6% and your split with your broker is 50-50, right? You only see 50% of the commission check after you split with your broker and after the franchise fee comes out. So you guys have no idea a lot of the time, you have no idea how much money that you're paying to your franchise and how much money you're paying to your broker. You don't have a clue. Now, in your defense, I believe that sometimes that's the way the deck is stacked, meaning that, you know, we're not given that information directly because it's, you know, blatantly threatening, you know, to some broker owners, not all, but to some. But guys, here's the deal. You should know. You absolutely should know how much you're paying in franchise fees and how much you're paying in broker commission splits. You absolutely should know that. Because the question that begs answering is, would a good business person know that? Of course a good business person would know that. Come on. If I'm out there, you know, busting my buns, you know, to bring in a $7,000 commission check, and I end up with ostensibly $3,200 of that check that I busted my buns for, you're darn tootin' I want to know where the rest of that money went. Well, why don't you? Why don't you? Why don't you want to know? Why aren't you interested in where more than half of your money went? I'm interested in that. And again, it's not a function of saying, well, look, this is how much I'm paying to other people. That's not it at all. I mean, that could be part of it, but it's just you should know where all the money goes for the hard-earned commissions that you all bring into your wheelhouse. Where's that money going? Well, see, cost of sales is often under the radar, right? You never know. You should know your cost of sales. You should know that. I can't emphasize this enough. If there's one area where we as an industry, as a population of agents, are driving blindly, it's right here with cost of sales. We don't know. We don't know. Is it easy to know? Yeah, it's easy to know. Then why won't we do it? I don't know. It's easy to figure it out. Now, I'm not going to lie to you and say that I always knew this. You know, I always had it at my fingertips. I will tell you, the last 12, 14 years of my career, I always knew where the money was going. And if I had questions, I asked questions. I worked too hard not to know and not to ask questions. So if you get your brains around anything out of today's coaching session, what I want you to get your brains around is this area called cost of sales. Look on that cash flow chart that Gary included in the material that he sent out to you and get your brain around cost of sales. I want you to know at all times how much you are paying to others out of that hard-earned commission check. Okay, so we've got gross revenues, less cost of sales. Now we're down to this thing called gross profit. And in your materials, there's a gross profit worksheet, I believe. So, you know, it's easy to plug into that worksheet, to that spreadsheet. So we've got gross revenues, all the money that we earn, all the commission checks that we earn gross. And the first thing that we're going to take away are the cost of sales. Cost of sales. When we do that, we're left with gross profit. Now, what comes out of gross profit? Well, what comes out of gross profit are all of our operating expenses, and some of them are listed there. Advertising, marketing, automobile, business taxes, coaching, dues, education, entertainment, office supplies, professional services, postage. You get the idea. And, you know, we really need to be abundantly clear, guys, because this is another area where I see us coming up short. You know, what are legitimate operating expenses that we can write off? You know, I see a lot of people not taking enough in the way of write-off legitimately and legally. We don't want to do anything that's going to get us into a pickle with the tax man. But you need to really pay attention to this area too, because once you take away your operating expenses, you're going to pay taxes on what's left over. And you want to lessen your tax liability as much as humanly possible, as much as legally possible, right? And when you don't take your write-offs that are your just due, that's going to be a problem. So we're going to circle back to this in just a second in terms of how to keep track of this stuff, because I know that we're not the best record keepers, are we? Okay, so now we take our gross profit, right, and we're going to subtract all of our operating expenses, and we're left with this thing called net profit. This is what we're going to pay taxes on. In my opinion, this is the number that we should be awarded for. Right, we should get an award for our net profit, not for our gross revenue. Because again, so many people in the real estate business have huge gross profits. They make all this money, and they get accolades for it. And when it comes down to their net profit, sometimes they're in the red. They're losing money. It's crazy. But that's how this business rolls out, right? It's really crazy. So let's go back to section one, goal setting. You know, in our goals, we want to state our goal in terms of transactions, right? We want to also say, well, if I do this many transactions, you know, I have a goal of this much gross revenue, and I want to have a net profit of X, you know, this much. So set goals around your net profit. Set goals around your net profit. But I got bad news. We're not done yet. We're not done whacking away at the pepperoni here. You know, when we, you know, it's just like boom, 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 boom. You know, like all of a sudden we start out with all this money, and then you chopping, and boy, what we're left with can be pretty eye-opening sometimes, if not alarming. So now from our net profit, guess what we got to do? We got to pay taxes, right? We got to pay taxes. And once we pay taxes, then we're saying, well, this is the net after tax, right? This is what I get to keep. This is what I get to live on. Too many of us make the mistake of living off the gross revenue. We think that that's part of the equation, and we're doing all kinds of crazy things like commingling funds and everything else. So, this whole area of taxes, guys, is another area that can get real estate agents into a lot of hot water. I know a lot of real estate agents who are on payment plans with the IRS, and they're pretty egregious payment plans. You know, they're pretty, it's a pretty tough monthly nut. You know, the IRS doesn't really care, you know, if you have a bad year. If you have a payment plan with them and you miss a beat, you're going to have issues. And so we really need to be hyper-vigilant about personal tax liability. I mean, hyper-vigilant, guys. I know it's not easy. You know, I've struggled too, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we need to understand this, you know, this personal net income after tax. This is the amount of money that we need to fund our lives, and we've got to work backwards from there. So we've got to work backwards on this cash flow sheet from personal net income all the way up to gross revenues so that we make sure that we have, you know, made an adequate provision for everything and that we're able to fund our lives. So with our operating budget and with the, with this whole wheelhouse that we're working on here in step three, a couple of ideas, right? One of the common mistakes that people make are thinking that the cost of sales and operating expenses are the same thing. They are not the same thing. Look on your cash flow chart. They're not the same thing. Cost of sales is typically a percentage that comes, or a flat fee that comes out of every commission check. With the exception of referral fees, that's pretty much true. Operating expenses are the things that we pay on a monthly basis to operate our business. That's thus the term operating expenses. The two biggest expenses, by the way, in our real estate practice, a real estate practice, are payroll and lead generation. Two biggest expenses in a real estate practice. And with the lead generation stuff, guys, you know, we got to be thinking in terms of what's it costing us and what's the ROI, what's the return. And by the way, with our ProQuest system, what you all are paying for it, you know, the amount of money that you're paying for it, it's one of the best deals on the planet. Always has been, still is. You look at what you pay per month for that system and what it does for you. Holy smokes. Talk about ROI. You just have to get good at lead conversion, right? Now, a couple of thoughts here in terms of running your practice from a financial standpoint. And that's a word about bank accounts and about financial software. All right, rule number one, thou shalt not commingle business funds with personal funds. See, this is where we get into trouble when, you know, when we can get away with it. You know, we can get away with it when we're making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. We can have one checking account and we're writing, you know, checks out of that one account for business and personal. Shouldn't do it, but can you get away with it? Yeah, probably. When you start getting up in the $200,000 to $300,000 price range, it's a really, or I'm sorry, $200,000 to $300,000 income range, gross revenue range. It's a really, 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 that's three really bad idea. Bad idea. So the best plan that I've seen is that we're going to open up more than one checking account, right? So we're going to have one business checking account, And every commission check that we earn, any checks that we earn for anything, right, will, you know, business-wise, will go into that business account. So that's where all the money goes. And then you should have a minimum of two more accounts besides your business account, preferably three. Three more. If you only have two more, the next account you're going to have, of course, is a personal checking account. And you're going to move money from your business account into your personal checking account for your personal expenses, your mortgage or rent, you know, food, utilities, clothing. You get the idea. So you have everything that you earn going into a business account. Then you're going to move money from your business account into your personal checking account for personal expenses. And then you should have a third account where you're moving money from your personal account into your tax account, right? That's how it trickles down. So ideally every month, if you only have three accounts, right? If you only have three accounts, ideally every month you move money from business checking into your personal account, and then you move money from your personal account into your tax account. That's how it should roll out. You stop commingling money. The fourth account, by the way, would be some sort of personal savings account. That would be your fourth account. A minimum of three, preferably four different accounts. That's how you want to roll. But when you are up in, you know, the upper commission levels, and you're commingling personal and business funds and tax funds, the only thing you're going to accomplish is you're going to accomplish creating a mess. Just a mess. I see it all the time. It's like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Really? This is how you're rolling? Not a good plan. Not a good plan at all. Okay, financial software. For most of us, Quicken, Quicken, for home and business will work just fine. By the way, Intuit, who's the company who owns Quicken and QuickBooks, they did not pay me to say this. For most of us, Quicken for home and business, that software will work just fine. You can buy it on the web. There are a ton of videos and online courses you can take to learn that software. It is a piece of cake to learn. I mean, you talk about user-friendly. Oh my gosh, it's so user-friendly. And what'll happen is you can write one check. You can write one check in QuickBooks. I'm sorry, Quicken. You can write one check in Quicken. And it automatically posts the expense and everything else. I mean, it's just all autopilot. It's a little bit of setup in the beginning, but then it's all autopilot. And your accountant will love you. Now, for others of us, I got to the point where, I had an S corporation and we had a separate corporate account and blah, 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 blah. And the accountant felt that there was too much money going through the business each month, that we should be using QuickBooks, which is to kind of characterize it in layman's terms, QuickBooks is Quicken on steroids. Most of us don't need QuickBooks. I did back in the day, and maybe some of you on the call need it as well. So it's either going to be Quicken or QuickBooks software. Both are put out by a company called Intuit. So get your bank account squared up and get yourself on some accounting software is the bottom line here, right? All right, so let's jump on to step four. Comment. I just got a comment across my screen. Let me see here. All right, this one person is saying, my broker told me that none of these numbers matter. Okay, so the broker says none of these numbers matter. What I would say is that how can I say that your broker is dead wrong without being rude? And if your broker would like to have a conversation with me about it, I'm certainly going to be willing to listen to why he believes that none of these numbers matter. But at the end of the day, I can't imagine what somebody would do to convince me otherwise. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think that the comment is funny. I think that what's funny is that a broker would say that. I just think that's funny, right? That's like, oh my gosh. I mean, these numbers are vitally important. How could a broker want to convince us of otherwise? And look at it again, at the risk of insulting anybody, what I would say is that your broker probably has an agenda there by making that statement. Guys, here's the deal. It's really up to us to have knowledge, right? To acquire this knowledge and acquire these skill sets. Because if we don't, right, if we don't acquire this knowledge and these skill sets, you know, what ends up happening is that we're at the mercy of people who know more than we do. I don't want to be, when it comes to my money, I don't want to be at the mercy of somebody who knows more than I do. I really don't. Not when I'm running my business. Now, look, do accountants know more than I do? Sure. Financial planners? Nah, maybe. I don't know about that. But at the end of the day, I need to know enough, right, to run my business. I need to know enough to know what's going on. I need to know enough to know where the heck my money's going out of each commission check. So, you know, without mentioning any names, what I would tell you is that anybody who says that these numbers don't matter either has an agenda or that person doesn't know what he or she's talking about. Sorry to be blunt, but just being honest. Okay. So section four of our business plan is the previous stats, sources of business. And, you know, here's another place where I know that this is hard because we're not wired for it, guys. By the way, you have a source of business spreadsheet, in with your materials. And you need to go through each and every transaction and determine where it came from for many reasons. It's not just one reason. It's just, look, this isn't just a fun little exercise that we get to do each year because we got nothing better to do. This exercise of creating a solid business plan, is centric to our business. And the information tells us a great deal about where we are, where we've been, and most importantly, where we're headed. So our source of business spreadsheet is going to tell us several things. First of all, it's going to tell us where our lead generation efforts are paying off and where they're not. I literally before this ProQuest coaching call, hung up the phone with someone who arguably had in the past put tremendous amounts of money into lead generation systems that paid literally zero in return. In one case, this lead generation system was I think $3,500 a month. $3,500 a month. If I'm wrong about that, it was $3,000. It was either $3,000 or $3,500 a month. Let's just be conservative and say it was $3,000 a month. That's $36,000 a year for a lead generation system. And this lead generation system yielded this person, are you ready? Not one commission check. Not one. So, as a coach, I'm saying this got to go, right? This is crazy, me spending this money on this lead generation system. And so lo and behold, this person jumps on the bandwagon of another lead generation system that was about as expensive, not quite, maybe $2,800 a month. That one was better. That one yielded two commission checks. Guys, you've got to be ruthless as a small business. You've got to be ruthless in the real estate business because, listen, we eat what we kill. In the real estate business, we eat what we kill. And if we're spending money on lead generation sources that yield us little to nothing in the way of a return, and we can't fix it, we got to dump it. And we've got to reallocate those resources somewhere else or pocket them, one or the other. Can you imagine spending $36,000 in a year and getting zero return? To me, that's mind-boggling. It's unconscionable. I honestly can't even connect those dots a little bit in my freaking brain. But yet, month after month, that $3,000 check went out to pay for something that was not working. Guys, I don't care if it's $300. We've gotta be ruthless in this wheelhouse. So this is one thing that our source of business tells us, right? You know, where we need to either fix something or dump it or reallocate resources. Now here's the other thing. I got another comment here, guys. So I got my Outlook sound turned off so that when emails come in, it doesn't disturb the recording. You'll hear that little dinging behind there. So let me look at this other comment. I'm half expecting a broker to give me hell here, right? The comment came back. Said this is why I don't trust him, the broker, right? Well, look, I wouldn't trust him either, right? I wouldn't trust him either. All right, so guy definitely has an agenda there to make that kind of comment. So anyway, oh, you guys make me laugh. So anyway, back to the source of business. The other thing that the source of business spreadsheet is going to do is it's going to act as a guideline for us to determine where our business is coming from in the next year. And when we get to step five, right, step five of our business plan, which is our lead generation plan, boy, that source of business spreadsheet from the previous year is going to be a big piece of coming up with that lead generation plan. You know, after setting our goals, the lead generation plan is probably the centerpiece of our business plan. You know, we're going to answer the question, we'll get there. I don't know if we'll get there today. You probably will. Probably get into step five today. But the lead generation plan answers this question: Where is each and every transaction that I'm going to do next year going to come from? Right. So the second thing that our source of business spreadsheet tells us is where it's a guideline for where our business is likely to come from next year. So number one, it tells us where we're getting an ROI or not on our lead generation dollars. Number two, the source of business spreadsheet tells us where our business is going to come from next year. And the third and final thing that the source of business spreadsheet will tell us is, hey, this is working really well. It'll tell us something's working, right? That, you know, oh, my referral and repeat system is really paying off, or, you know, my ProQuest system is paying big dividends. How can I turn the volume up here? If something's working really well, how can I get it on steroids, right? So here I go. You ready for a little bit of a detour, and then we'll come back here? Guys, where do you think I see the biggest underutilization of resources when it comes to source of business? Where do you think it is? Take a one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, right? Where do you think it is? Answer, lead conversion stats on your ProQuest system. Real world. I always like to bring you guys real world stuff. Spoke with a client last week. Client is bemoaning the fact that somebody turned off the lead generation faucet. I said, you got a fair number of listings out there. What about your ProQuest system? Oh, the ProQuest system has been really, you know, really terrible. It's not generating anything in the way of calls. I got, you know, properties on cul-de-sacs and nobody drives back there, blah, 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 blah. Honestly, this is the conversation. I said, with all due respect, I find that hard to believe. There's either because with your number of listings out there, there's either something wrong with the system, right? Meaning the way that you're executing it, or you're not dealing in brokering and facts here. No offense, but you know, I don't believe it. If it is this far off, you're not executing something properly, or you don't have the facts. I said, do you know how to run a ProQuest report? No. All right, here's how you run a ProQuest report. I want you to hang up, and I want you to go run your ProQuest report, and I want you to email it to me. This was last week, okay? So I said, run it for the month of October. I just want to see October 1st through October 31st. Guys, I kid you not, I'm not making this up. 64 inbound calls, unique inbound calls. This is after we took the people out who called more than once. 64! Okay, so why are you walking around with the belief that somebody turned the faucet off? You had 64 calls from your ProQuest system. Are you friggin' kidding me? Really? Well, I guess I just wasn't paying attention. I said, look, with all due respect, I guess not. But what ends up happening, we get into these beliefs that, hey, you know, nothing's happening, right? And we really believe it. And then we see evidence to the contrary, and it's like, oh, I guess I wasn't paying attention. I guess not. 64 calls? What do you want? You want 65? Now, here's the other problem. I believe if I'm going from memory here, guys, so if I'm off, I'm off a smidgen. I try not to exaggerate. Really, I do. I really make an effort not to exaggerate. I don't think exaggerating, especially on a coaching call, helps anyone. I believe that of those 64 calls, roughly 47 people, 40-something people, I think it was high 40s, 47 of those people hit the direct connect, right? Hit the direct connect. You know, they said yes, right? Would you like up-to-date pricing on this property? If so, say yes now. So 47 of these people direct connect to the agent's cell phone. Are you ready for this? The agent only spoke with 14 of those people. A third. You want to know something else? You want to know the average time that those conversations lasted for? 28 seconds. 20-some seconds. They're all between like 20 and 30 seconds. So the person, right, tells me the system isn't yielding any calls. Oh, okay, 64. That's all. 64 calls in a month. Gee whiz, that sucks, right? Then they only answer a third of them when they come in. And then the third that they answer, the average call is lasting under 30 seconds. Come on, guys. Please. I mean, it's painful. It's really painful. I don't know what to say. I don't have the software in my brain to connect the dots. Tell me what the problem is. Problem's not with your ProQuest system. Maybe you ought to look in the mirror. Maybe that's the problem. So when we are looking at our source of business, right, here's what I think happens. Say, oh, well, you know, I did 6 or 8 transactions from my ProQuest system. That's worth keeping around. Really, that kind of thinking is dangerous. You know, it's complacent thinking. 6 or 8 transactions? Are you kidding me? It's like kissing your sister. You're happy with that, right? So I'm happy with a half a dozen transactions. This is, you know, I'm definitely getting an ROI, John. Well, look, with all due respect, you're thinking like with the ant, with the brain of an ant, really. that's what you're happy with that? Come on, guys. I'm not. Look, please don't construe this as an arrogant statement. I'm just trying to make a point. And what I will tell you is that I didn't always possess the skills, but I always possessed the commitment to get the skills. You see, I didn't always possess the skills, but I always possessed the commitment to acquire the skills. What skills? Lead conversion skills. Always, always had that commitment. I was on a mission. I was on a mission to get those skills. And I got them eventually. And see, once you have them, you can make a statement like the one I'm about to make. Are you ready? Here's the statement that I hope and pray you will not consider as arrogant, because I don't mean it as such. But if I got 64 calls like that at this stage in my life, after having worked hard to acquire my conversion skills, if I got 64 of those, I would convert probably 6 of them on the spot and another 12 or 15 of them over time. That's 20 deals in 1 month. Yes, I would. Yes, I would have. You know, I know I would have. I wouldn't bet against me, guys. Why? Because I acquired the skills. Not because I'm so great and wonderful. I acquired the skills. No other reason. You get that many calls in a month over time, over time, I get 64 calls like that, 47 of them direct connect. I'm going to nail a dozen of them over time. Not 6 or 8 a year. Please. It's painful when I hear that. It hurts my ears. Think bigger. Think bigger. All right. So, source of business spreadsheet is obviously a pivotal piece of the puzzle. Don't ignore it. Fill it out. By the way, guys, just let me tell you, I've been looking at these with some of my clients. I think John DeSmet's on the call. John, you're about to get another dose of this right after this call, about a half hour, John. You know, you and I and Judy are going to talk about this again, right? But with our sources of business, you know, I was looking at one today, right? And there was like a internet lead, right? Well, look, that tells me what kind of internet lead, right? You know, inbound call, right? That, from where, right? You know, guys, you have to be really specific here. I mean, you make me laugh, really, with this. It's like the realtor's lament. You know what I mean? Excuse me. I'm choking myself. I'm laughing so hard. Anything with the slightest detail, right? We like. You know, we don't want anything to do with it, man. We just wash our hands like Pontius Pilate. Hey, you got to be a little detailed here. You know, we need to know a little more than inbound call or internet lead. That doesn't tell us nothing. Zero. So, source of business spreadsheet is pivotal in our business plan. It's vitally important. For the reasons that I stated. Number one, what? It tells us about our ROI, right? ROI. You know, where are we spending money? Are we getting a return on it? Number two, it acts as a blueprint for next year's production, where our business is coming from. And number three, it tells us what's working, and we can answer the question, wow, this one's working really well. How can I get it on steroids? How can I amp it up? How can I take what's already working and make it work even better? So please, you know, let's exercise serious due diligence with this one, okay, number four. All right, looking at the clock here, I don't think we're going to complete all of step five today, but that's okay. We'll review it real quickly in our final coaching session here in November, and then we'll finish up the step five and the other two steps. So section five of your business plan is your lead generation plan. Again, after your goals, it's the centerpiece of your business plan. And what it does is it answers the question, where are each of the transaction sides that I want to complete next year going to come from? Again, we cannot, under any and all circumstances, complete this part of our business plan without the source of business spreadsheet. It is impossible to be even reasonably accurate without it. You're going to be all over the map. All right, so we've got our source of business spreadsheet in front of us, and let's say that we're shooting to do next year Oh, I'm going to say 40 sides. I think that's a nice number. If you're doing 40 sides a year as an agent, you're doing a pretty darn good job, right? So you want to do 40 transaction sides next year, and you've done your source of business spreadsheet, and so you know where each of your sides came from in the previous year. So we're going to quantify and interpolate. Quantify and interpolate. Well, what does that mean? Well, what that means is that if, for example, we did 20 transactions the previous year from referrals and repeats, we can say, hey, if I continue to do what I'm doing, I'm going to do 20 sides this year from referrals and repeats. That's a tried and true number. And it truly is. You know, market nuances and you know, big anomalies in the market notwithstanding, your referral and repeat system, if you continue to run it the way that you ran it the year before, will almost to a transaction yield you the same as it did the year before. But what if? See, that's the quantify piece, right? What's the interpolate piece? What if? What if you said, you know what? I'm going to do a few more things in 2017 to increase my referral and repeat business. I'd like to increase it from 20 to 25 sides. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a video send each month to the people in my sphere. And I'm going to update them every month on market conditions. And I'm going to implement that as another leg of my referral and repeat system. And I got to believe that if I do that and I up the ante a little bit, I'll do at least five more sides from referral and repeats next year. Well, see, that's the interpolate piece, right? That's the piece where you say, I'm going to get this sucker on steroids. What if you did, like I was talking about before, what if you did last year maybe four or five transactions from ProQuest? And you say, oh, well, that was a good one. I should, if I did what I did last year, I'll do another four or five. I would say, after what you heard today, if that's what you said to me, I'll smack you upside your head, right? I'll drive you to Mississippi and I'll push you off the Tallahatchie Bridge if you say that to me. But what about if you said to yourself, you know what, I'm going to make a commitment to get really good at this lead conversion game. And I'm going to make a commitment to intercept these calls, you know, 60-65% of them, two-thirds of them, I'm going to make a commitment to intercept them when they come in. And no more 30-second or less conversations. I'm going to hang in there. I'm not going to bail on the call, right? And I'm going to move my ProQuest conversion from just a handful to, look, one a month. How about one a month? Maybe, you know, what I'm asking you to do is like, you know, way out of bounds. Maybe your brain can't wrap itself around that. But gosh, you know, could you do one a month? Oh my gosh, come on. Come on, guys. Sure you could. And to me, that's like really, I mean, that's really skimping. That's really skimping. It's like when I say skimping, I mean like setting the bar really low, really low. So that's your quantify interpolate. And quantify means what did I do last year? Interpolate means what can I do to get it on steroids, or what new things can I add, or do I want to add in my lead generation game plan to up my transaction size? Oh, well, I'm going to... let's think of a brand new. I'm going to do a geographic farm. We have a great geographic farming series on our training website, right? So I'm gonna do a geographic farm, and I expect that it's gonna take about 6 months or so to get that thing cranking. But in the next 6 months after it gets cranking, I expect I'm gonna do, you know, six or eight transactions in the second half of the year from my farm. Right, there you go. Right, there's another leg that we're adding to our lead generation. See, the idea here, guys, is to bridge the gap from the number of transaction sides that we did last year, and bridge that gap to the number of transaction sides that we want to do this year. So again, in my example, if 40 sides is what we're shooting for, in 2017 and we did 30 last year. We've got to bridge the gap of 10 sides, right? We've got to, where are those other 10 sides going to come from? Again, ad nausea, if we did 30 from these sources of business last year, right? These various sources of business, we did 30 and we keep on doing those things, we'll do those 30. But if we want to add some legs and bridge the gap from 10, we either need to get some of those things on steroids, like referrals and repeats, like our ProQuest system, or we need to add other legs of lead generation, like a geographic farm, for example. So remember the three pillars of lead generation when we think about this. Pillar of lead generation is the referral and repeat system. The second pillar of lead generation is marketing. ProQuest is a beautiful example of a marketing system, right? And the third leg of lead generation is prospecting. So that would be expireds, for sale by owners. You know, you can make an argument that open houses fall in there. By the way, when we're talking about our lead generation plan, I think that a lot of us would rather have brain surgery than add anything to the prospecting pillar, right? We're cool with the referral and repeat pillar and the marketing pillar, but for a lot of us, adding something, adding additional legs to our real estate practice in the lead generation arena in the prospecting pillar, not so much, right? I'll do root canal before I add anything in the prospecting pillar. Look, guys, I'm not going to go too deeply into this. I just suffice to say, I was talking to a couple of clients yesterday. I don't know if they're on the call, but I don't think so. Ginger and Steve Lingo down from me, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And, they have been very methodical in terms of laying in pillars of their practice. So they started with referral and repeats. Then they moved to the expireds on the prospecting pillar. And now they're going to do a geographic farm in the marketing pillar. And they're using their ProQuest system across all three pillars, by the way. I always say our ProQuest system is ubiquitous, right? But they've gone about this very methodically. And when you have all three pillars of lead generation firing in your real estate practice, you got something going on in all three, what ends up happening is if something underperforms, the other two pillars are there to kind of pick up the slack. So if you have a month where referrals and repeats underperform, the marketing and the prospecting pillars can pick up the slack. If you have a month where marketing is underperforming, referrals and repeats and prospecting pillars can take up the slack. It's really important to have all three firing. I did. I absolutely had all three firing. I had the main legs of my real estate practice were referrals and repeats. In the marketing arena, it was ProQuest, and the way that we were using it back in those days, and we're going way back, is the magazines were the rage, the Homes and Land and Homes and Living, Homes magazines. And we took out a 2-page ad in every one of two of those magazines. And it drove in tremendous amounts of calls. Now, the ProQuest system strategy has changed since then because those magazines are on life support with the exception of the resort areas, right? But the fact of the matter is that was our marketing pillar, the mainstay of our marketing pillar anyway. And then, of course, the third pillar was expired. So we had a nice balance. 50% of our business was referral and repeats, 25% marketing, 25% prospecting. The point here is a mistake not to have all three of those pillars of lead generation firing. And if they're not in your business plan in 2017, you ought to get them all firing. So we're going to stop here today because I see that we're running out of time. So between now and next coaching session, I really would encourage you to do a couple of things. Number one is take a look at where your cash is going. When you get a commission check and then you get a net commission check, where is the rest of that check going to? We just need to know what that is. Source of business spreadsheet, probably one of the most important documents that you're going to have to create your business plan. And then we get to this place of your lead generation plan. Think of it this way. What question we want to answer with our lead generation plan is, where are each of my transactions going to come from next year? What sources of business? So we will see you 1 week from today. We're going to finish up our business plan. In the meantime, get out there, chop wood, carry water, and do it like you mean it. God bless you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gary Elwood with ProQuest Technologies. Welcome to today's call. Now, I know John's got a lot of great information to cover with you here today, so I'm very quickly going to go ahead and turn it over to you, John. Take it away.